Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm so excited to introduce you to Melissa Dowdy, a national touring comedian who recently opened for Maria Bamford. In September 2019, she made the top 101 comics in the country for the World Series of Comedy main event held in St. Louis, Missouri, where she finished in the top nine. She brings her unique, authentic comedy to every show, encompassing fans of all ages. Very personable with an almost, oh, shucks, delivery. Melissa's comedy is sort of like that really smooth liquor that is so easy to drink, then it hits you like a sledgehammer out of nowhere. She brings the same slap-your-knee enthusiasm to every show, from backyard cookouts, comedy clubs, and corporate events to the big lights and big stages of large theaters. Known for her clean comedy, down-home charm, and quick wit, Melissa appeals to fans both young and old. She served as a judge in the first comedy pageant fundraiser at Court Square Theater, hosted by X2 Comedy in October 2022. She entertained the audience with a short set while the votes were being tallied. She was and is hilarious, and why we can't wait to have her back to close the upcoming April 15th show at Court Square Theater. Welcome to the podcast, Melissa. It's great to have you on today.
Aw, shucks. Thanks for having me.
You are the best, Melissa. Thank you. We first met actually when you were performing in those final rounds at the World Series of Comedy in St. Louis, Missouri. And when I heard you were from Salem, Virginia, I was like, oh my gosh, that is just right down the street. Can this even be true right now? I had to talk to you. And since then, we have stayed connected and you've done other X2 comedy shows for us where we worked on stage together. I very much enjoy working with you and cannot wait to share some of your story with our laughers today. So thanks again for coming on. You're awesome.
Oh, thank you. You're one of my favorite producers. So look at us.
Look at us go. No. Now, are you originally from Salem, Virginia?
No, I was actually born in Colorado. We left there very shortly after my birth. And then I lived a lot of places. Clifton Forge, Virginia is really where I was raised from about 8 on to 18 or 19. And then I moved to the Roanoke, Salem area where I've been since.
Okay. Now, you were always a comic, no? Or let's just talk about when you first realized you were funny. Let's start there. When did you realize this?
Well, I thought I was funny all along. I've not always been right about that. Okay. But I've always thought I was. But I came home from kindergarten or first grade or something, and I had a knock-knock joke. And I told it to mom and she laughed, and that was her mistake. And I am here today because she made the mistake of laughing at that god-awful joke.
I got to know, what was the knock-knock joke?
It was knock-knock.
Who's there?
Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse who?
Mickey Mouse's underwear. It doesn't even make any sense. It's pretty blue for me. I was a very blue comic in the early years.
And she got tickle pink. And
yeah.
Okay.
And really, it was the first time I took a friend or a family member from a sad moment to laughing. Anytime you can turn somebody around like that, that's when it started.
Yeah. Laughter does heal. I believe in that. You know, life's hard. And so it can't be serious all the time.
No, indeed.
That just helps us feel human again, I feel.
Agreed.
And not take ourselves too seriously, which I feel like I have to do daily for myself.
Me too.
So you did that. You started your knock-knock jokes at 5. But when did you start your stand-up comedy? What was your first stand-up comedy performance?
Went down to the Roanoke Comedy Club. Well, it wasn't the Roanoke Comedy Club. That was before, but it was I went down to the comedy club here in Roanoke. It was called Slap Happies at the time. And I went to a show. I'd never been to a comedy show, as much as I loved comedy. And I went in and I fell in love with it immediately, even more so than I had been. And went to the owner and said, I want to be a comedian. And they said, we need some help in the kitchen. And I was like, second best. I'll take it. So I worked in the kitchen and waited tables for the shows. And one day he came to me one evening and he said, if you had to be funny right now, could you do it? And I was like, yeah, I've been waiting my whole life for this. Got it. Had I prepared anything? No. Did I know what was involved? No. But I was ready. So I was serving drinks, went back, said they called me up. And I don't know that I've ever been less funny than that first. It was painful.
Oh, no.
I learned so many lessons just in that first, you know, five minutes. Set. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It was something. It was something.
What would you say was your biggest takeaway from that?
Preparation is key. It's just not going to come to you.
Right?
Don't ever wing it.
Right?
Yeah.
I took classes to face my fears of doing stand-up comedy. And I remember that, I think it was even the first class. It was the first or second one where the instructor kind of educated us on how people prepare for the craft. And if they're on a special or TV, you know, doing any kind of work like that, they've got to give their set or script to the producer so that they know what's going on their show.
Right.
And I remember that was such an epiphany to me, because I felt like the goats make it look so easy. You think they're just up there talking off the cuff and they speak all the time. And that really was my first insight to gain real appreciation for the greatest comics out there. Yeah.
Yeah. The key is to make it look like it's natural. And that is tough.
As you discovered.
Yes. In vivid detail.
Did he give you another chance after that? Or what did you do?
Yeah, he kept giving me another chance.
Okay. Did you ever take classes or anything? Or did you learn through open mics?
Open mics.
Okay. Well, that's really great. What were you doing career-wise before you started pursuing a comedy career?
I was actually working at the Waffle House during that time. So it was really, I was living the dream. Really. But that comedy club closed like maybe a year later. So I didn't do any other comedy until like 2004. And that was sporadic. Then I really started this time into it full time in 2012.
2012.
Well, not full time, but like hitting it hard, trying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, laughers, Tisha here. You know what goes great with this podcast? Preposterous Gourmet Popcorn. We're so excited to sponsor this podcast, highlighting some of the most wonderful people in the Shenandoah Valley. To show our love for you laughers, we're giving you 15% off today at preposterous.com. That's PreposterouS.com. Use promo code LAUGH15.
Yeah. Did you start traveling all over at that point, or were you hitting more open mics in 2012? And then somebody said, I'm going to pay you.
Yeah. It was another comedy club, and I wish I could remember. I think I have a poster up of that. No, it's down. I can't remember the name of the comedy club. Oh, Callback Comedy Club.
All right.
And the guy that was running it, I went up in like a guest set, and then he let me start emceeing. And that's when I met a lot of other comics, and Julie Scoggins, who was out of North Carolina, but now I think she's in Florida, does a lot of cruises. Met her. And that's when that was where I did my first feature set.
Oh, how did that feel?
It felt great. Yeah.
So you had some mentorship under Julie for a while.
I did. Yeah. She was very helpful, but I was like, I don't know how to get in, how to start this really. And she said, just submit to every festival there is. And I was like, okay. And I didn't know what that meant. So I just didn't do anything. And I was too stupid to ask a question. I was like, what do you mean by that? That would have been a real simple thing. So for months, maybe a year, I was like, should probably submit to something. I don't know where or how, but yeah. So it was crazy.
Yeah, I noticed on your website, you've been to quite a few festivals.
Yeah, what was
that? What do you like about performing at festivals?
Just meeting so many different comics, seeing how people, especially at those, you get backstage, you see how people prepare, you get to talk to them, see how they hone their craft, where they're from, and really... especially with the World Series of Comedy, I bet I get 80% of my work from doing that festival, from doing that competition.
Oh,
still
wow.
Today. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were in the World Series of Comedy in advance to the main event. And we talked about that in the intro, where the top 101 comics in the country perform. Can you share more about that, since we're talking about it and how it works?
Yeah, they have satellite competitions, the top 40 in whatever area. They have them in all over the country. They're in California, Boston, St. Louis, Virginia. They're just all over the place. And you could submit to all of them if you want to. And they pick the top 40, and those people compete in that club. The top three of those people get to move on to the main event. In what was in Las Vegas for years. I don't know where it is right now. And so I just did a bunch of those different satellites, met a lot of different club owners. And that was fun.
And that's how you got a lot of the bookings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That you got a lot of work out of that basically series, which is kind of like a festival, because I've been to the main event where you have different people in the industry and bookers there, which is really great. What are some of your other favorite festivals that you've been a part of, or that you would recommend to comics to submit to?
I would recommend, I would recommend Laugh Fest in Grand Rapids.
Oh, cool.
That's the only free to submit comedy festival I participate in. If there is a free comedy festival, I do not submit, because I have found in the past that if people don't have to pay for something, the people that are serious about it aren't always there.
Okay.
So I want to go to where other comics want the same thing I want.
Mm-hmm.
We all just want to like build our craft and hone it and get better. And for those free ones, you don't always get that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Laugh Fest, I would love someday. My dream is to be on the Asheville.
Oh, Asheville
Comedy Festival. Oh my gosh. I've submitted so many times.
Really?
Yes. Limestone in Bloomington, Indiana is very good too. They are a lot of fun.
Wow. Yeah. Asheville's beautiful. I went to the Biltmore not too long ago in history, like a couple of years ago. And it was beautiful. And I was like, this is a great place. And I had just heard of Asheville Comedy Fest. So I guess it's very competitive to get into that one.
Very.
Because if you're not getting into it, what is happening?
What is wrong with the world?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you've had some incredible opportunities. I mean, maybe Asheville, I say Comedy Fest is missing out, because you've opened up for some big names in comedy, like Arsenio Hall, for instance. Where did you do that? Where would you open up for him? Where were you?
That was in Cleveland.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. And then you opened for Maria Bamford just last August at the Jefferson Theater in Roanoke.
Yes.
This is amazing, Melissa. How did you land those gigs, and what were those experiences like for you?
Well, I got an email from Lynn Cure. He is part of the Comedy Zone I don't think it's called the Comedy Zone anymore, though. It's something else. But anyhow, he's part of that. And he sent me an email saying, are you available on whatever the date was? And a lot of times I say, I send back, I don't know, where is it? Or, you know, because if it's just a one nighter, it's tough to travel 8 hours, do a show, drive back the next day. And, you know, it's just hard. So I was like, I don't know. But for some reason, I just said, yeah. So he said, well, I'm going to submit your video to Arsenio for to be an opener for him. And I said, huh? Like there's another Arsenio I haven't heard of. No. Arsenio Goldberg. Yes. Oh, yeah. He's a great guy. He's good too. Check him out. So, and Arsenio actually handpicked it. He watched the videos and he picked who he wanted and he picked me.
Oh my gosh.
There you go. I got to meet him and one of the nicest people you would ever want to meet. No wonder he had a talk show. I mean, if he's talking to you in a room of 100 people, he's just talking to you.
Oh it's my like, gosh.
I just wanted to tell him everything. One time in third grade, I stole a candy bar. Yeah. He was just super nice and very supportive and all that. It was good stuff.
Yeah. And then Maria Bamford, that was just the most recent experience. Yeah. Talk to me about that. Can you share some insights?
Yeah. A friend of mine was working at the Jefferson Center and said, hey, they're looking for a comedian for Maria Bamford. And I'd done some work for him and he said, I gave him your name. So they may be calling. And I don't know if she saw it and liked it and picked me or if somebody here picked me. How that worked.
But they called you and you said, yeah, I'll do that.
I'm in.
Yeah. The feature that's going to be on the same show with you at Court Square Theater on August 15th also opened up for Maria Bamford. She said that was just an amazing experience, a bit like Arsenio and how personable she was and just how gracious and kind and
She was fantastic. She came to the dressing room. We talked for like 45 minutes. It was a little surreal.
Yeah. You would think someone at that level might be like off to the side preparing. Yeah. I guess maybe she's just done it so much.
Maybe.
Hashtag goals for us one day, right?
Yeah. From your lips.
Indeed. Those are really incredible experiences. You have so many touring the country and performing from the backyard cookouts to the big theaters. What are some of your favorite places that you have performed?
There was one couple in right outside of Greensboro that had a chili cook-off every year. I don't know if they're still doing it, but for several years, I would go to their house in their backyard. There's probably 50 people, kids running around, people eating chili, and perform for them. And they had just a tip jar. And whatever tips I made, but they were so fun. And it was so nice to like mingle with the crowd beforehand and get to know people. And that's one of my favorite events that was recurring.
Yeah.
And I did a show. I guess Maria Bamford and Arsenio would be the other ones that were so big just because there's nothing like a theater. It's just crazy.
Yeah. Those are big. How big is the Jefferson Theater? How many does
I think it's like 600.
Okay.
Yeah. And but Arsenio it was a 2,500 seat venue. And I think he had like just shy of 2,000 people there. So that was fun.
That is fun. What would you say is the most unusual place or unusual places you've ever performed?
Oh, golly bum. I did a show.
Golly bum.
Golly bum. I did a show that was called Stand Up and Strip.
What? And
yeah, exactly. So they had a stand-up comedian followed by a stripper. Followed by a stand-up comedian, followed by a stripper. And I can't tell you how very little people care about what's coming out of my mouth when boobies are next. Bring on the boobies. Nobody cared what I was saying. Oh, yeah, that was pretty brutal. And I did a show, probably the worst show was, I don't like outside venues because the laughter doesn't bounce off of any. You can't hear it. Yeah. And so your timing's always off. And I just hope people are laughing. And it was a fundraiser for in Covington, Virginia, for fallen soldiers. Mm. And they were creating a bust to put, you know, in some area that people could, you know, see and whatever.
I can't
think of what I'm saying. But anyhow, cut that part. But anyhow. And the guy went out on stage before I'm standing backstage ready to go out. And he talked about how his brother had been killed in action. There is nothing funny about that at all. No. And it was, I'm crying. He's crying. Dawn, when I tell you a bald eagle flew over that venue,
I promise you
it was true.
Oh my gosh. It was,
he pointed to it. He said, there's a bald eagle. And that's what, and you're a comedian, Melissa Dowdy. Oh dear God. I'm wiping tears. I'm like, who's going to care about, I can't believe it's not butter spray now. Nobody. It was something.
What did you do? Did you just give it a minute or how did
you? I just took a beat and went into my act because really that goes back to why I did it to begin with. You know, if people are down, let's switch it around. Let's find some joy. So
yeah.
That's what I did. It was something.
I'm sure you brought them around and say, yeah. Okay.
And actually, I just remembered my very favorite show I ever did was something called Tickled Pink in Charlotte, North Carolina. Okay. It was a fundraiser for women with breast cancer.
Oh.
And there were 500 women there and they had cowbells and they were laughing and ringing their cowbells. And as they were walking out, I'm standing, you know, thanks for coming. And several of them said, thank you for giving us something to laugh about. And it has been so hard and we've done this and we've been through this, but we are just so happy that you didn't talk about any of that. You were just funny. And that's my favorite show ever.
Mm. I think you just touched on one of the reasons, or the many reasons that I love comedy so much is how much joy uplifts the spirit and encourages the soul.
Yeah.
You know, it's in a way it feels like a spiritual hug. I don't know how else to describe it. It's just, you know what I mean?
I just want you to be a little lighter when you leave the venue.
Yeah.
A little pep in your step, a little, okay. I didn't think about whatever's going on in my life for that 30 minutes.
Yeah.
45 minutes,
whatever the length of the show was. So yeah, absolutely. And it just makes you feel like you know, we get tight, understandably uptight because it's tough. You know, life's not easy. Mm-mm. And then when you laugh and you relax, it's your body feels better, you know, in a more relaxed state. So it's truly a gift to be able to do comedy. And I really appreciate your gifts so much. I want to talk about, you're welcome. I want to talk about, how do you come up with your material?
It's really observational. If it happens, there's nothing in my act that I talk about that didn't happen to me or somebody directly connected with me. Because when I make up a story on stage, the audience knows it and it never, ever hits. Mm-hmm. I've got to talk about what I know, what really happened. Do I embellish it? Sure.
Yeah.
But it really happened. Some of it, sadly, I do not have to embellish at all. But a lot of it I do.
Yeah. Actually, I tease my husband and other comics that we work with and they do the embellishing. Might be like, exaggerator.
An exaggerator. Which is so much nicer than liar.
I agree with that too. And people enjoy stories and they really relate to that. You know, they can see themselves in it, or a family member or a friend, or, you know, their neighbor. And that's what cracks us up, is just seeing that side of it. You're like, I know that.
Yeah. And that's really what I want to be, as a storyteller.
Yeah.
Love telling stories.
Me too. Now, when you write, how do you go about your writing process? Everybody kind of finds their way, and I know it evolves. So what it looks like today, maybe next year, is going to look a little bit different. But in general, what is your writing process like?
Well, I don't, and I probably shouldn't say this out loud to where people who could hire me could hear it. I probably shouldn't say this, but I don't, and I should, just sit down and write. Mm-hmm. I can't just sit down and think, what's funny? I can't do it. And that there's lots of exercises you can do and watch the news. There's, number one, there's nothing funny on the news.
not lately, no.
not that's clean. I don't just sit down and write, but something happens and then I'll say, okay, I think this is funny, but I can't, I don't know where it's going yet. I'll just have a seed of it. And then I may have a little one-liner on stage. And if it's a really good audience, or I'm feeling loose or whatever, I'll play with the audience. And sometimes that's how stuff gets written, on the fly.
You don't have like a notes folder in your phone or a notepad or whatever.
I got a bunch of post-it notes everywhere. Just like, oh, that's funny. And I write down, I may never see it again, but I will write it down. Somewhere in my brain is the funniest joke I've ever heard in my life. And I woke up in the middle of the night, thought of it, and thought, I'll remember. And do not remember. And I could probably be famous right now. It was that good, but it is gone. Or it was the worst joke anybody's ever seen. So who knows?
When you come to the spring show and I give you a little gift bag, don't be surprised if there's a notepad in there.
Oh, don't be surprised if there's what?
A notepad in there.
Good deal.
Yes. How do you organize your material then? So I'll for example, I'll write and then have it organized, and each joke will have a title. And so I'll print that out, and then I'll have depending on how long the set is, if it's a shorter set, it'll just be a note card. They're numbered, and it's just the titles, the set list.
Yeah.
It's a longer set, maybe half sheet of paper. Same idea though. That's how I organize my material. How do you do it?
I know when I go on stage, I know what joke I'm starting with and what joke I'm ending with.
Okay.
And sometimes in between I'll work on stuff that I haven't, but even then my first little joke set ends with the word chicken. Riveting, I know. Come out on April 15th. You'll hear the rest. And then I know when I say chicken, then I move on to something else. And I know the first thing of the next one. And I know the last word of the second one is fondled. Come on out, April 15th.
It's a cleanest show.
We're not going to fondle chickens, but chicken and fondle. And I know when I say fondled, I know the next joke I'm going into. So it's about, key words for me. And when I straighten it up, when I try to organize it, I know that if I think of something today that's about food, I know where to put that in the food section of my set. And that kind of thing. But there's no real... Now, at one point in time, I did write out every joke word for word, because I was afraid if I didn't use it for a while, then at least I would know, I could go back to that and go, oh, yeah, that's how I said that. And then it would come back to me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's no really real writing. I don't know. I just try to use keywords in my head that help me transfer from one thing to the other. And it's really about what feels natural. Going from food to the gym feels natural, but going from food to technology doesn't.
I see. Yeah.
It's just a gut thing, I guess.
Okay. And so you kind of have a mental outline that you bring with you. And you're ready to surf in the moment as you need to.
Yes. And I have all those topics on a sheet. It's like three columns and it's just one word, all of it. And then before I go in order, but I may skip things. So I know I have my set list, but it's not necessarily everything on that list I'm going to talk about.
Now, what's behind the decisions you make there where you might not do some of the topics? Is it from like reading the room, observations? What goes into it for you?
Yeah, it's reading the room. It's all that. It's reading the room. It's observation. It's the energy of the crowd. Sometimes I will embellish on certain pieces because I know that the crowd's really going to like that part. And I may trim up some other pieces that I know they're not going to be into. But you can usually tell from the energy in the room what's going to work. And I know my first joke, if that first joke doesn't hit, I can tell you one thing, we're in trouble. That joke usually always hits. And if it doesn't, it's going to be a long night.
I haven't ever seen that out of you. And I just actually realized that I did something to the laughers that some of my guests do to me when I'm not in their industry, and they'll say a word or a phrase or an acronym. And I'm like, wait, what is that? What do you mean by that? Just realized I said reading the room. And I bet there are some laughers out there that do not even know what that means. Can you share, Melissa, what reading the room means so that those that are unfamiliar with that term can get educated on what that means?
Well, I don't know. I know what it means to me.
Yeah, it means to you.
Yeah, to me, it can mean a lot of things. It can mean the demographics.
Yeah.
It can be age, race. Are there more men? Are there more women? Are there, younger, older? All of that. Is it college? Is it a nursing home where I did a show one time because my career was on fire? A dumpster fire, but it was on fire. You just have to know. And honestly, for me, my set doesn't change that much, no matter who I'm doing it for, because it's clean. So I can say whatever I want to say. I can use whatever material. So it doesn't really change that much for me, but that's what it is for me. It's about who's in the audience. Mm-hmm. I did a show a couple weeks ago. Oh my gosh, it was brutal. It was somebody's 80th birthday and he loved Jerry Seinfeld. And they were like, here's a birthday boy, sit in the chair. Here's your comedian. And so he didn't want to hear a comedian. He didn't want to talk to me, bless his heart. And he even got up and walked away at one point.
Oh my goodness.
So by reading the room, instead of doing 25 minutes, like I was told, she said, go until you think. And 10, 15 minutes, we were done.
Yeah.
You just got to know. You can't just, they told me to do 25 minutes and that's what I'm going to do. You got to read the room. You got to know who's listening.
Mm-hmm. So. Who it's for, why you're there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of clean, you are a working clean comedian. Have you always worked clean? And if so, why?
I have always worked clean. I think now I love a dirty joke. I love blue comedy as much as the next person. I don't enjoy being uncomfortable in the audience listening to jokes. And I think a lot of people do. And that's great. You go to those shows. You support that comedian. I am all for it.
Yeah.
But don't come to my show expecting that kind of comedy. It's not going to happen. I'm just not that kind of writer. I just don't see things that way. And I wanted to be able to perform and my parents come.
Yeah.
And not feel like I was humiliating or embarrassing them or whatever. So that's really what it was. And it's tough to write clean. Mm-hmm. I think it's harder to get booked as a clean comic.
You think so?
I really do. I think it is. In my case, maybe.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Ah, that's really interesting because we'll just have to talk about that a little bit more, because I find that Maybe not in a lot of arena. Well, I don't even want to say it that way. I have found that you do get more work as a clean comedian, myself, yeah, personally.
Corporate.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
That kind of thing. And then I have seen when you do go to, you know, the comics that are more well known, and they may be blue oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And then before them, you don't see that comic on the actual video recording of the special, but the comic that comes before them to warm it up is a clean comic.
Yes.
Go ahead.
A lot of comics, I was just going to say what you were going to say probably, is that a lot of comedians want a clean comic to start the show.
Yeah.
So that they can be the shocker.
Yeah.
That they can, yeah. Yeah, there's nothing worse than going on after a blue comedian if you're clean.
Right.
Because they're already riled up for blue. And I'm like, so I eat butter. I'm like, who cares? What do you put it on? It doesn't go well.
I think maybe in some comedy clubs, I can see that. I can see where that could be potentially what you're talking about, because I don't tend to go into a lot of the comedy clubs, at least not right now.
Yeah.
And I can see where that could be the case if that's the route you're going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's a little harder. Yeah. If they want blue and raunchy and you're not that.
Mm-mm. Nope, that's not me. But in my personal life, my language is atrocious. I mean, a nun would faint. It's terrible.
Don't ever put a nun in a car with me on I-81. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, no. No. It's
too much. Well, who have been your biggest comedy influences, would you say, over the years?
Jim Gaffigan.
Oh, I love Jim Gaffigan.
Oh, he's brilliant. Brian Regan.
Right.
Unbelievable. So good. Cup of dirt. Kathleen Madigan.
Oh my gosh. I just discovered her recently. My husband loves to watch stand-up comedy all the time. He's always introducing me to, like, if he doesn't think I've seen him or whatever, he's like, check this one out. And she's obviously been around for a while, has an amazing career. And now that I've checked her out, and I'm like, where has she been?
Oh, yes.
I love her.
Her Bothering Jesus special is brilliant.
Oh, I'm writing that down. I don't think brilliant. She's seen that one.
I think it's on Netflix.
Okay.
Yeah, it's super good. Fortune Feimster.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant. And Mae Martin.
I don't know.
Just got a new special coming out on Netflix. I think it's coming out this month.
Okay.
Really super, super funny. Super funny.
Yeah.
But those people.
Mm-hmm. What do you feel that those comics have taught you that has impacted your career the most?
Well, actually, Mike Burbick, I can never say his name. That's
who
awful.
Can?
And Nate. Nate B. And Mike B.
Mike B. and Nate B. Come on. Yeah. Bart Gazzi, and Mike Birbiglia.
Yes.
I have had to practice this in front of the mirror quite a few times. So
you
do
a good job. It worked. It works for you.
Right.
But they, especially with Mike, I'll just call him Mike because we're so close. the way he grabs a crowd and gets their attention, he can sit on the eighth. The way that he uses the stage, he will sit on the edge of the stage and whisper. And you can hear a pin drop. He has got them in the palm of it. It's a beautiful thing to watch.
Yeah.
He just does a fantastic job. And all of these people, really, the way that they get the crowd in, the way that they, you know, make you feel a part of it without... Yeah, I don't want a heckler, so I don't mess with the audience at all. People are like, I don't want to sit on the front row because I don't want you messing with me. I can assure you,
Yeah. Same here. You're going to be fine.
Yeah. I'm not going to come to your job.
No.
Yeah. So I just want you to have a good time.
Yeah.
And it just seems like these people can do that.
Yeah. Some.
And especially if they do a joke that doesn't really hit and how they turn that around and make that funny. Really.
Yes. Yeah. Brilliant. What do you like about Nate Park Godsey?
Nate is he's just so dry and so he's
yeah.
His delivery is just so and then we don't and
I know, isn't it?
It's brilliant. I say brilliant 100 times, but it is. It's brilliant.
I'm gonna ask you what's your favorite joke of Nate's. I'm gonna tell you mine.
Okay.
Mine is his Mount Rainier joke with the dead horse. That's my favorite. Have you heard of it?
Oh my gosh, I don't think I've
you
heard
must
it.
Google. Nate Parkazi and Mount Rainier. And I'm expecting a text after that because
you will get it.
It is hilarious.
Yeah. Oh my God.
This is a gift to you laughers. Also, Google Nate Parkazi, B A R T G A T Z E, I think. I'm very close. Comedian and Mount Rainier. And you will not be disappointed.
No, you will not. I have two of my favorites of his. One is when he goes through airport security with his ID.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I think you'll feel fine. And the other one is where he goes to the fridge to get something to eat during a football game.
Oh, I've got to see that. I think I got to check that
good
one
stuff.
Out too.
Good stuff.
Now, but good Mike stuff. And Nate, Mike B and Nate mm-hmm. B. Yeah. Are both
the B brothers.
The B brothers. They're also clean too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really, to me as a clean comedian, very encouraging to see two clean comedians able to advance in their career to that level and bring so much joy to audiences anywhere they go.
Oh, yeah. They're both, especially Mike is such a great storyteller.
Yes.
And back in the day, Whoopi Goldberg had a special. And she, that was the first, probably the first comedy special I ever saw that I thought, that's it. That's what I want to do. During her set, she made me cry. And then in the next 30 seconds, I'm laughing again. She took you on an
a roller coaster.
It was beautiful. Beautiful. Well done. So I think Mike does that too.
Yeah, I think so. Those are some superhero kind of comics, which is a great segue into my next question. If you had to create a comedy supergroup with three comedians, including yourself, who would you choose and what would you call the group?
So three, I can only pick other two people or can I pick three? The other two.
All right. Only because I love you so much, Melissa.
I love you too. Thank you so much.
We'll expand it slightly. Okay. So who do you get to pick?
The 17 comics I would pick for my 64 comic tour.
All right. Rein it in, Melissa. Rein it in.
Okay. Three. All right. I think I would pick Brian Regan goes on the list immediately. Golly bum. I got to take Mike and it would be a coin toss between May and Fortune. I think it would be a coin toss.
All right.
Because Mike's such a good storyteller and so is May. And maybe I don't want Fortune there because she might be funnier, you know, like she has the same kind of country thing.
Yeah, she
I don't
does.
Want her to be fun, so she can't come. Sorry, Fortune. I know you're listening to this and very upset by that. It would have to be, Nate's coming.
Mike, Nate, and May. The B brothers. And
the B brothers and the double M's. Let's start a world tour.
That'd actually be a great tour, to be honest with you. So what are you calling this group? Maybe that's it.
Yeah, I think.
The B brothers and the...
Double M's.
The double M's. We're starting something here on Virginia's for Laughs.
All my people, which is really me with a different voice. I'll connect you now.
Oh, shucks, it's me.
Dadgummit.
Oh, that's really great. As we wrap up here, how can people best follow you? How can our laughers best follow you on social media or otherwise?
I am on Facebook because I'm over the age of 50. So you can find me on the Book of Face, Comic MD. And I'm also out there as Comic MD, sometimes with a space between Comic and MD and sometimes without, on Instagram and the Twitter. Yeah, I stalk TikTok constantly, but I don't have anything on TikTok yet.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I haven't ventured out with that one either.
I don't know if I might be too old, they might not let me in. Yeah, so I want to do something out there. I just haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, same here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you have a website too, right?
I do, melissadowdy.com, D-O-U-T-Y.
There it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, laughers, will be sure to put that information in the show notes for you as well. So if you're driving or working out, please be safe. You can get that and grab that later. Plus, we will also have for you that discount promo code LAUGH15 so you can buy your delicious gourmet popcorn from our sponsor at preposterous.com. That's PREPOPSTEROUS.com. And we will put that for you in the show notes as well. Well, in fact, our sponsor actually sent you some popcorn. Did you get it?
Oh yes, she did. I got it. The box is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's also empty. I think they forgot to include the popcorn. We'll go with that. Yeah, they forgot to include it. I didn't eat it all. It's beautiful and it was delicious.
Oh yeah, it is so delicious. They have sweet and savory flavors. Be sure to check them out at preposterous.com. like I said, we'll put that for you in the show notes as well. And thank you for joining me today, Melissa. This golly bomb, this has really been so much fun.
Oh gosh, let's do it again.
Let's do it again. I just love having any chance that I can get to hang out with you. It's a blessing each time. So thanks again for coming on the show.
Me too, Dawn. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. Laughers, you can see Melissa perform live April 15th in the second season of the X2 Comedy Series at Court Square Theater in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Plus, don't miss this hilarious lineup that includes three local comedians, including yours truly, that's me, Chris Womack, JMU's funny professor, and local funny fave Jay Zare, plus Donna Lewis and your headliner, Melissa Dowdy. We can't wait. We'll be sure to put the link to buy those tickets to this show for you in the show notes as well, so you can join us for all the funs. Don't miss out and get your tickets today. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend, and until next time, cheers.